He is our returning champ. You can find his work for the Salt Lake Tribune online. SLTRIB. I think you can figure out what that means. .com. He covers football and basketball and more. You can follow on Twitter. Use the handle at Kyle Goon. Kyle, always appreciate the time. How you doing?
Okay. I always appreciate the time too, Steve. Fellow East Coasters, we gotta stick together, man.
Yeah, now where was it exactly you're from again?
I'm from Maryland. I'm from the Baltimore area.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I'm a long way from home.
Yes, so am I. Obviously, beyond football and hoops, you covered a very interesting and timely topic over the weekend. Student athletes at Utah and their level of concern about changing U.S. foreign policies. If you would, if you could elaborate, there's a Utah tennis player who's from Turkmenistan, which I learned is on the Caspian Sea. Kind of elaborate what this young guy is going through.
Yeah, so, I should first of all point out that I haven't been able to find a Utah student athlete who has been affected by the travel restrictions that were enacted by the executive order. But the man you're talking about is a 19-year-old student who's lived in Utah for 10 years since he was 9 years old, and Turkmenistan shares a border with Iran, and it also is a Muslim-majority country, 85% Muslim. And it has a very oppressive authoritarian government. If he were to return there, he would have to be enlisted into military service. So basically, you're talking about a kid who has really, most of his life has known life in the United States. It's his home. He went to school here. He goes to the University of Utah, and now he's been living on a green card, but now he's kind of trying to speed up his citizenship process, just in case something happens. And so I think that's kind of what I learned talking to the student athletes here. It's really just anxiety, not sure they know what's going to happen, and just trying to take steps to kind of secure their residence inside the United States, and in the case of this tennis player, his citizenship.
You know, kind of on that note, as we shift back to hoops, you wrote about it yesterday. The Utes got down to Washington early. Coach Krestowiak took it out on the whiteboard, injuring his hand in the process. But his team responded with a 20-0 run and kind of ran away from the Huskies, which they should because the Huskies are bad. Kind of seemed like the whiteboard thing is a culmination of a lot of frustration from the head coach. You wrote about the slow starts. Is it anything the team is or isn't doing? And what do you think they can, I guess, kind of do to solve it?
You know, I think we talked a little bit last time about how new this team was. I mean, they turned over basically a dozen players that didn't play for the team last year are on the team this year. And that's complicated, and a lot of unexpected things happen. And I think what's really been happening, especially since the last time Utah played Oregon, I mean, we're kind of looking at two different Utah teams. That team was on a hot streak. They've been shooting 54% in every game in the five games leading into that game. And they just kind of hit a wall a little bit. I think that loss to Oregon, maybe some guys who are new to the team just had a little trouble kind of coping with that, and they've had some trouble. They lost two games on the road after that Oregon game, and they're really on the wrong side of the bubble right now in terms of trying to get back to the NCAA tournament for a third straight year. And I think it's really been hard for Larry to kind of establish that culture where, hey, we got to bring it every game. We got to be consistent. We got to bring consistent energy. We got to defend consistently. I think this has been a challenge more so for Larry than any other year because he has so many new players. And yeah, I definitely think when they were down to Washington, they were down 18-10 early. They didn't have Markelle Fultz. They didn't have Malik Dime. There's no reason Utah should have been down at any point in that game. And I think Larry just kind of snapped, sensing that his team kind of needed one of those moments to just see his frustration and energy And I don't think he wants to do that anymore. He kind of said, I'd rather just be real. But, you know, it's just one of those moments where a lot of things had been happening the last couple of weeks, and I think it's just been a problem with having so many new guys and not being able to establish a consistent culture with all those new faces.
You know, along those lines, last time we talked about their terrific freshman, Devon Daniels, and back on January 26th, he had a pretty decent all-around game against the Ducks. It looks like his productivity really dipped until the game you were just talking to, Washington. Is it, I mean, did he hit a freshman wall, run into some tough matchups, and now with the Husky game under his belt, is the thought he'll be better moving forward?
Yeah, I think there's two parts to that. I think one, I mean, his game is sort of slashing, dribble drive oriented, more so. He had been hitting threes, which is something we talked about last time. But, you know, he once he kind of stopped that dribble drive action coming off the pick and roll, you know, I think he struggled a little bit as teams adapt to that. And definitely people adapt to that. I mean, because right after that Oregon game pretty quickly was Cal, and Cal's one of the best defensive teams in the league. And Stanford, Utah just didn't bring it. So he kind of had some struggles with people kind of figuring out who he is offensively and stopping sort of the main way he likes to attack. And so, yeah, he got a little bit back more in a groove. Larry also talked about him not really being the same player in practice that he is in games. And I think that caught up to him a little bit. So Larry's kind of made it publicly known that, hey, Devin wasn't really doing the things he needed to do in practice to be good in the games. And, you know, I think that put a little chip on his shoulder, and he's been pushing a little harder in practice and trying to pay attention to what he needs to do in the game plan. And Larry kind of calls it basketball karma. Once a guy works hard in practice, it starts paying off in games. And according to guys on the team, that's what's been happening for Devin.
We are with Kyle Goon from the Salt Lake Trib. You kind of alluded to the previous Oregon game being a linchpin game for Utah. Before that, the Utes were coming off a demolition of the Washington schools, 1-point loss to then number 4 UCLA, a win over then number 25 USC. After and including the Ducks, they've gone 3-3, now have 8 losses. Not included in any bracketology that I've seen. Is it still possible for this to be a tournament team? Is it kind of all or nothing with this Oregon game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really is. I mean, the problem that Utah has is, you know, they at the end of the year, they're probably going to be a 21 team. Right now they're at 17 wins, right? And 21 team, if you finish fourth or fifth in the Pac-12, I mean, conventional wisdom tells you, hey, that should be good enough for a NCAA tournament team, but they just don't have any big wins. I mean, when the committee's going to look at their resume and look at the resumes they're stacked up against and be like, okay, what stands out? Utah just doesn't have any win that really helps them. Their best win right now is still the one we talked about last time, the home win at against USC. And USC's tailed off a little bit. So, it's just right now, without sort of that quality win, especially on the road, I mean, they don't really have anything that jumps out, and they have a loss to Stanford and a loss to San Francisco that's going to hurt them. They just don't really have any positives when you're going to compare them to, hey, well, this team from the ACC, this team from the Big Ten, you know, they beat such and such top 25 team here. They just don't have that. And it's going to be an upward battle, upward climb if they lose this game Thursday. I mean, any scenario basically has to finish with them winning the Pac-12 tournament if they want to go again. So, like you said, I mean, they're not really on a lot of bracketology radar because they just don't have those wins that the committee has valued in the last couple of years that really pushed the team over the edge.
Yeah, Kyle, there's a guy that we did not discuss last time. I mean, he played 3 years ago, went on his mission, came back this year, got in there for about half the game against Oregon, Parker Van Dyke, who's now a 22-year-old sophomore. For folks not familiar, he's going to be in there. What kind of game does he have, and how does he contribute to this team?
Yeah, I mean, he's You know, he's kind of there were some questions about him, I think it's fair to say, coming into the season, because he was recruited at really a different stage in the program. They had just come in the Pac-12. He, for reference, I mean, he's a kid who grew up, his grandparents were huge U fans and huge boosters. He went to East High School, which is miles away. So he dreamed of being a U. And he was kind of recruited at a time where they didn't have a lot of talent and they weren't a contender in the Pac-12. And played on as a freshman on one of those kind of bad teams. But, you know, I think where he's established his role is just as a guy who brings energy. You know, he's not the most athletic on the team, but he's definitely going to be have some better defensive instincts than some guys. He's a little more mature. He's going to bring energy no matter what. And recently he's been hitting three-pointers, which is critical. I mean, you know, I don't know if Parker's ever going to be, you know, an above-average starter in the Pac-12, but, you know, as long as he can stretch the floor a little bit and get some hit some shots when he's open and just give some of that hustle and energy and maturity that this team sorely needs, I think he'll have a role. So his role has been increasing. He's back in the starting lineup for the first time since December. So Larry just kind of likes where his head is at and where his energy's at. And that's been two things that Utah really hasn't had all that much of in the last five games since they last played Oregon.
Last question here for Kyle Goon of the Salt Lake Trib. The last time these two teams faced each other, the Utes kind of had to have felt like they let a golden opportunity slip through their grasp. Led most of the first half, within four with about 2 minutes left in the game, but the Utes just couldn't finish at the rim at the end, got rejected a couple of times. What has the team said this week about reversing those situations this week, and what do you think they have to do to beat the Ducks?
Yeah, I mean, they have to do a lot because statistically, I mean, it's sort of a strength-for-strength matchup for Utah. And athletically, I mean, it, just the way the Ducks defend and are able to be so versatile and switch so much, I mean, it's just kind of a nightmare for them. And so I think two things. One, Utah's going to have to control tempo and run them a little faster. I feel like Utah's kind of had done a lot of ball stopping when they get rebounds, when they get steals. They've kind of let the defense set. And against Oregon, that's kind of something that's not going to work for them, trying to go against their half-court defense. So it's going to be important for them to kind of run as much as they can, make the Ducks kind of get back, and try and score in transition where it's going to be a lot easier than going against Boucher and Bell and those shot blockers. So I think that's one key. And I think the other is just prevent those backdoor dunks that those same players had got. I mean, you saw in the last game, Utah was leading for a lot of the first half, brought a lot of good energy early on, and then just defensively just sort of sunk. And even in the couple games before that, I mean, the last time they were in Eugene last year, you know, they started out with a really good zone. Were able to kind of defend Oregon in the half court a little bit, and then by the end of the game, it's Bell and Boucher getting those dunks, right? I mean, just they're able to get dribble penetration. They find these matchups where the defender under the basket is forced to come out to defend the dribbler, and, you know, Dylan Brooks or whoever can just dish it off to Boucher or Bell for an easy dunk, and you just can't defend that. So, I mean, they got to be able to deny those guys and not allow those easy baskets.
Always great info and analysis. You can keep up with what he's doing. Salt Lake Trib, sltrib.com. The Twitter handle is at Kyle Goon. Kyle, you travel safe. Look forward to catching up with you at the arena. And thanks again for joining us, pal.
Thanks, Kyle.
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve.
All right, take it easy.